This is the Watts Podcast, episode number 63, part 2, Off-Grid Living.
Power on.
America is addicted to oil.
Addicted to oil. Addicted to oil.
It doesn't matter when it runs out. What's really going to matter is when we start having less and less of it.
Solar stocks suddenly became all the rage on Wall Street.
We're talking about everything from the green to the dirty of energy and sustainability. This is part two of the show. Part one of the show is a general reminder and overview of the world's energy situation. Bill Kemp, who has written books about biodiesel, off-grid living, and energy efficiency, joins us on the show once again. He's on the line from his off-grid home, which is close to Ottawa, Ontario. Bill was on the show 3 weeks ago now talking about biodiesel. And actually, it feels longer than 3 weeks for me. But for today's show, we will be talking about living off-grid and how to ditch the grid, if you want to ditch the grid. Bill has written a book about this topic called The Renewable Energy Handbook, which you can purchase from Amazon.com. And actually, I also noticed that Amazon now has Biodiesel Basics and Beyond in stock right now. So, Bill, how long have you been living off-grid?
Well, we've been 14 years now off the electrical grid and the natural gas grid, and about the only grid we have coming here is the road.
And why did you decide to live off-grid?
Well, people who live off-grid do it for a number of reasons, but primarily the main reason is economics, which surprises a lot of people, because you hear a lot of people say, oh, it's too expensive. But that's really not true. It shouldn't actually cost you any money. What it is a decision as to where you want to live, and usually what promotes it is either purchasing a new lot to build a new house or cottage, and when you find the ideal spot that might be overlooking a lake or up in the top of a mountain or wherever it happens to be, there becomes an issue of, oops, the hydro wires are a distance away.
Yeah.
And hydro doesn't extend the wires for free. You have to pay for that. And what you will find, depending on the type of soil and where the the property is located, a kilometer or more of distance from your chosen building site to the hydro wires will generate a bill for extending the lines of up to $50,000.
Wow.
And of course, it goes up from there. So it doesn't take an awful lot of thinking to realize that, well, gee whiz, if the extension of the lines is $50,000 and I can put an off-grid system in for $35,000 or $40,000 that suits my lifestyle needs, then it's a no-brainer. Why would I spend that equity on somebody else's equipment when I can put it into my own home and also live with the energy self-sufficiency and much more reliable power in the long run.
Yeah. So one thing that I'm kind of wondering, though, that if people are building or living kind of in remote areas, does that mean that generally they're driving more?
Well, certainly. And just because you're off-grid doesn't necessarily mean that you're more environmentally friendly or that you're less carbon neutral. And that's one of the big myths about off-grid living. In fact, I would argue that in most cases, a person who lives downtown in a condominium wears an Armani suit to work and walks on walks or takes public transit is going to be way ahead in terms of environmental footprint than the the back to the lander who lives off grid, grows organic food and uses a 72 Chev pickup truck to cart stuff to a distant village. So environmental friendliness and off-grid do not necessarily go together. You have to actually look at the whole picture before we can take an accurate environmental assessment.
Mm-hmm. And so I know in your book you have a short survey of different people living off-grid and how they live off-grid. Are there many people living off-grid?
Oh yeah, there's enormous numbers of off-gridders. If you look at North America, although there's not super accurate statistics, but if you just take single-family homes and cottages or second homes, the numbers estimated at around a quarter of a million. And we're probably, in Canada, we probably have a higher number, actually, by per capita than in the United States, because we have a lot of off-grid, either hunting camps or fishing camps or ecotourism camps as well that can be added into the list, where it's just completely impractical to extend the hydro lines.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many of these types. Now, not all of these off-grid installations are benign and pretty. Many of these just simply run diesel generators for their off-grid applications. So if we deduct them, we're probably in Canada, we're probably down to some going from about 30 to 35,000. We're probably cutting it down dramatically, probably into the 15 to 20,000 range of people that are using renewable energy to produce their electricity and in their off-grid homes.
And I guess they would just do that. People would be using diesel generators just because they're a lot cheaper than buying wind power.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe their energy needs are extremely high, or they've been there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, the chapter that you refer to, what we've done there, is we call it a showcase of off-grid homes. Now, I'm focusing primarily on the issue of renewable energy, rather than just simply using fossil fuels to generate to generate your power. And the issue, one of the big issues, of course, is the sizing the system to your to your lifestyle needs. And of course, that's a very important part of this the whole application, to match the budget and the system size.
Before we get into that, though, what type of lifestyle changes have you had to make living off grid? None.
Absolutely none. No. This is, if you were to take a little tour of our house, what you would find is that it's a very sustainably built and energy efficient home. But what you will find inside is that we have a very, very typical kind of middle class life. You know, in terms of appliances, I mean, electric refrigerator. We have a big screen television set and surround sound system and satellite TV and satellite internet. We have a bread maker, cappuccino machine. We have a gymnasium downstairs that we built that has, you know, cardio equipment, treadmill, another stereo system down there. I've got my office and, you know, with computer, fax machine, you know, all of the usual stuff. So really what you see here is a very, very normal kind of lifestyle. But having said that, it's designed in such a way that we've used the most energy efficient appliances and so on, so that our total electrical demand is actually around five times less than the average North American home.
Okay.
So it's still quite easy to live a good quality lifestyle. Right. It's just making sure that you get the most energy efficient appliances.
Can you give us any numbers? Like how much power does your home consume?
Well, we on an average day, assuming we don't need air conditioning, the house will consume about 3 kilowatt hours per day.
Okay.
And if we crank on the air conditioning, of course, it depends on the primarily here, it's not so much the temperature, it's more the humidity extraction, and so it doesn't need to be on very, very much. But if it's a, you know, an extremely hot and humid day, you could take our consumption up to a maximum of, well, maybe 9 kilowatt hours, perhaps 10 kilowatt hours would be, you know, on the high side, but somewhere in that range, and that happens very infrequently. But even still, the system is still able to support the air conditioning system for the house.
Three,
still far below the average home.
3 kilowatt hours. That's really, really small. I in my apartment, I'm using around 11 to 16 kilowatt hours, and I thought that I was doing pretty well.
Well, that's not bad for an average, you know, person connected to the grid, but you know, you'll find that there's an enormous amount of waste built into that, and it's very, very important for people that are off grid to understand energy efficiency first, because the fact of the matter is that you know, you're simply building your own power station, and for every, you know, for every dollar you put into energy efficiency, you save probably $5 or $6 on the equipment necessary to generate the power. So it's you know, it's just completely uneconomic to be putting poor quality or energy inefficient appliances in. So if you look through our house with an untrained eye, you won't see any difference. But if you look through our house with a trained eye, what you're going to find is compact fluorescent lights are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doorbell at our house. A doorbell draws an enormous amount of power,
really?
Sitting there doing absolutely nothing, because it's what we call a phantom load. And so it's actually drawing just about as much power sitting there doing nothing as it does when you're actually pushing the button.
Yeah.
So what you're going to find here is a door knocker. Does exactly the same job. You'll see that the house is actually wired for X10, so that we have remote control. So that, for example, when you're sitting in the living room, you can turn on and off the lights or dim them while you're watching TV. So you know we're not losing any of those nice features. But what you'll find is at the end of the night, when we're done watching the tube and turning off the surround sound system, that there's a couple of on-off switches that we flip off to turn off the TV, to turn off the stereo and the amplifier, so that they're not sitting there consuming electricity while they're sitting in idle mode. And it's interesting to note that on our big screen high def TV, it draws almost exactly the same amount of power when it's turned off as when it's turned on running.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's very important to find all of those little tricks and reduce the energy consumption just to keep the cost of the equipment down.
So what is the big thing that we should be focusing on? I guess heating and cooling your home?
Well, assuming it's a new house, the first thing that you're going to do is start with the design. And the biggest energy consumer is the heating and the cooling of the house. So obviously, and I'm not going to bother getting into the sustainability of the house and the embedded energy and the material. Let's just talk about the actual operation. So you want to build the home to at least R2000 certification for energy efficiency and take advantage of as much passive solar heating and cooling as you can. And this requires careful site planning. The long axis of the house should face solar south. Roof overhang should be designed to reject the summer sun but allow the winter sun to come in.
Mm-hmm.
the house should be well sealed and have proper air exchange in it to keep the quality of the air as high as possible. The heating system needs to be carefully designed. You're not going to just slap in a central furnace in an off-grid home, because the fan that runs maybe 10 hours a day in the winter time is going to be too high of an electrical load. So you're going to pick different designs. Traditionally, most people use a high-efficiency wood stove, preferably one that is Environmental Protection Agency rated for low emissions. In our home, when we built the state-of-the-art at the time, unit had a catalytic converter built into it, and that's what we still have. We still use that stove in our home, although the technology has changed now to primarily to these more advanced combustion systems. But in any event, as long as the unit is operated properly and well maintained, there's very little emissions, not to mention very little cost in operating the house. The air circulation should be done as much as possible by natural convection and looping, so a good design to allow the heat to rise and the cool air to fall down so that it self-circulates. The proper insulation in the house, radiant barrier insulation in the rafters to reject the summer heat in the home to reduce the cooling load. So there's a lot of thinking about that. Backup heat has to be considered. Unless you're the sort of people that stay home all the time, there has to be some way of heating the house in the winter when you're not there. And this tends to be where most people will pick propane as the heat source of choice. And indeed, that's what we have used until very recently in our efforts to reduce carbon footprint completely. We've actually gone to using the biodiesel units that look like a wood stove, but they actually burn biodiesel and don't require any electricity to operate.
That's interesting. There's also pellet stoves are also quite efficient.
Yeah, pellet stoves are okay. You have to be a bit careful with them in terms of the total electrical energy that's required to operate them. But but there are some that are designed specifically for off-grid, and certainly one of the advantages of pellet stoves is that the pellets themselves are actually made from waste wood product in the first place.
Yeah.
So they tend to create a relatively carbon neutral fuel source, and as you point out, are very energy and environmentally efficient. So another perfect application. Hydronic heating systems are fine. The one thing that I want people to stay away from are these notoriously inefficient environmental disasters of these outdoor boiler stoves that we see dotting the countryside. They're just the absolute wrong place to start for heating a home from an efficiency and from an environmental standpoint. So once we've got the heat load of the building taken care of and the cooling load taken care of and reduced as much as possible, then we can start to look at the appliance selection inside. And of course, most of the systems now are wired just like a regular house. In fact, there's really no need to be wiring 12 volt or systems like old RVs did in the old days. In fact, even RVs and boats now are all wired for 120 volts and just simply use inverters because the inverters are so efficient and the appliances are so wide scale and efficient that you don't have to compromise anything in your lifestyle. So the house, our house, is just wired like a regular home. Up to the point of the electrical panel, and then that's where things start to change a bit. So in terms of then of the appliances, it's just a matter of getting, Energy Star rated appliances or searching out the very best appliances to reduce the energy consumption, making sure that phantom loads are not there. Actually,
I have a kilowatt meter that I use to monitor all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so kilowatt meters are a very good idea. For those that don't know what they are, they're a little plug-in-the-wall adapter which has a little display, and then you can plug your appliance into it and measure the amount of both power and energy that it consumes over time to get a good handle. In fact, one of the things that I always suggest people do, especially if they're buying my book, is to go to Annex 7, and what I've got in there is a worksheet, and what it does is it's a survey, and I suggest people photocopy it and 10 or 20 times, because you're going to be playing with pencils and paper and figuring this out, and write down all of the appliances that you want to have in this off-grid home. You want to track the number of hours a day that you use them and what their wattage consumption is, which you can get off the label in the back, and then you add it all up and we can see what our total energy balance is. The energy consumption in kilowatt hours per day is very, very important, because you don't want to go into a dealer to buy equipment and have the dealer say to you, well, how much do you have to spend?
Yeah.
Because that's the wrong way to look at this. What's important here is how much energy is your lifestyle going to consume? And, of course, you want to try to get your lifestyle to the point where it's consuming as little electricity as possible, but without making huge sacrifices in the quality of your life, because you just won't be happy with it over the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very important to get that energy balance worked out as accurately as you possibly can, so that you can go to the dealer and say, okay, what I want you to do is size me a system that will produce this much energy, and now let's go through and work on the design of that, and then we'll worry about what the cost is at the end of the day, and we'll see if it fits our budget needs.
Does it also matter when you're actually using that energy? Because, I mean, for instance, if you have a hair dryer on in the morning and your fridge all of a sudden turns on too.
Generally not, no.
Okay.
That was an important thing years ago when inverters were anemically powered, and people were always buying systems that were underpowered for the demand, and that's where we have to understand the difference between power and energy. Power is essentially the instantaneous amount of electricity that we are using. So if a device is drawing 10 amps of energy, electricity, that's like the amount of flow of water that's going through a pipe. So the amount of the larger the pipe, the more amperage that we can supply, and there is a limit to how much of that we can take instantaneously. But what's happening is that modern inverters are now sized so large that it becomes almost a non-issue. For example, in our home, cleaning days here are Wednesday. We have somebody who comes in and does the cleaning, and we tend to, while that's happening, we do the laundry, and it tends to be a fairly heavy day. So on that day, you've got the central vacuum running, you've got the water pump operating, the washer and the sometimes the dryer, depending on the weather, is operating. The lights are on, of course. And all of this stuff is running simultaneously. just like any other house. And as long as the inverter is sized large enough to operate all of those loads instantaneously, it's a non-issue.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the actual design of your home, did you design that yourself and build it yourself?
Yeah, well, yes and no. What happened was that we designed the basic look of the home and the floor plan layout to look like an old century farmhouse. And we drew up the plans as best we could, and then we took it to a retired architect who then sort of fiddled with our design. And what we wanted to do is we wanted a design that would use the least amount of materials and minimize the waste. So we didn't want to be putting up sheets of plywood, having to cut them in half and throw half of it away. We wanted to make sure that everything was used and that the space was optimized, the design was optimized. Mm-hmm. And we took an awful lot of engineering cues from some of the high-efficiency homes that had been built around the world and showcased at that time. And so we used a lot of things that were unusual at the time. For example, the TGI floor joists, which are now pretty much standard, but at the time were completely unheard of, that use a third of the building materials and allow you to have very large spans without support walls so that mm-hmm. we could reduce the costs of construction and also the material impact. So we finished the designs with Bernie, and then we proceeded to build the house, and we decided that we would build it ourselves. I had done an enormous amount of work on the previous home, so I was quite familiar with all of the construction techniques and so on. Mm-hmm. So we subbed out all the stuff that we couldn't do, obviously, the concrete and the excavation. We even contemplated doing the drywall ourselves, but we found that there was a physical limitation to that one, so we subbed out the drywall. But everything else, including the plumbing and wiring and whatnot, we did ourselves and completed the house, and took us about a year and a half, and very pleased with it.
But I assume for people who don't know how to do all that stuff, or who don't want to do all that stuff, there are companies mm-hmm. out there that will actually design from the beginning a really energy efficient home for you.
Absolutely. You can go to almost any builder that has R2000 certification mm-hmm. and have them work on the design. The big issue is you've got to work with a builder that understands that you have limitations in terms of electrical energy, and that will work with you to make sure that all of that is taken into account. So if they can't comprehend building a house without a furnace, then you best move on to somebody that mm-hmm. has more experience. And of course, a lot of people that want to live off grid tend to have their own idea of what their dwellings will be. You know, straw bale homes, for example, tend to be very popular with folks that live off grid. So they have builders that are already tuned into to the whole issue of renewable energy powered homes.
Okay. All the listeners out there, don't forget to check out Bill's book, The Renewable Energy Handbook, and of course his new book, Biodiesel Basics and Beyond. And the publisher's website is aztext.com.
Right? That's correct.
Okay.
Power off.